Did you see where, now you sell gold and silver coins for a living.
Right.
This is your fave, right? You like them because...
It's my icky guy.
It's your hooky. It's your hooky too.
My icky guy.
What do you mean icky guy? I don't know icky guy. What's that word?
It's Japanese.
Yeah, icky
guy. My passion.
Oh, if your icky guy.
Yeah, if you pursue your icky guy, then you're... Well, the best is going to come because it's what you love.
What you love is these
this
coins.
Is what I love, man.
So what's the advantage of the coins over just a hunk of gold? Because I could get one of those on Amazon and just buy a thing and, you know, have a big shiny hunk and put that in my basement. I can put it in my basement.
Two ways to make money. With a shiny hunk of gold, if gold goes up, it goes up. If gold goes down, it goes down. But with a $3 gold piece, not only do you get the value of the gold, but you also get the fact that this is a very scarce item, that the premium above its gold content also tends to rise. So there's two ways to make money with a numismatic coin, whereas with a bullion, there's only one. If gold goes up, it goes up.
And it's been pretty consistent over the last 100 years or so, where people continuously want coins that there's not a lot of, isn't
yes.
it? It's just a human nature thing, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, they want that which other people can't own.
Can't get, right? Like yeah. artwork, right? Antiques.
Oh, yeah, very much like artwork.
Old
yeah.
cars, right? Old cars.
I sold a coin that is one of two. There's one other coin known.
Really?
And yeah, the buyer paid $600,000
for
this
him.
Coin. And thought it was a bargain.
Yeah.
Thought he had really scored a bargain because he had one of two. And he really wants to buy the other one.
I bet he does.
But the person that has it doesn't want to sell it for the same reason. So it is, it's that kind of a market. It's wonderful.
What would be a chance of one of these really, of course, one of these really pricey things, all of our listeners, you and I don't really get to own these, but
right.
we just play. But right. what would be a chance of one of these really expensive things just someday just blowing up and saying, it's not worth anything anymore? I mean, is there a chance for that?
Well, I suppose there is. I tell the Langborn story. So we'll do quickly coin of the day.
Coin of the day, yeah. Coin of the week.
Okay. Coin of the week, okay. Mm-hmm. Coin of the week, 1933, $20 gold piece. So they made these things at the Mint, something like 20,000 of them. And, of course, President Roosevelt signs his infamous order, making it illegal to own gold, and it orders the Mint to stop paying out these gold coins. And the Mint says, unfortunately, our connected folks, the big-time collectors and the coin dealers and their like that storm the Mint every time we make a new coin, buy up a bunch of them to sell to their clients, they've already been here and they've already left with so many of these 1933 $20 gold pieces.
St. Gaudens? Are they St. Gaudens?
Yeah, St. Gaudens, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, in his infinite power as the new American dictator, Franklin Roosevelt sends out the FBI, and they go to all these collectors' houses.
Oh, good for Franklin.
Really, man. They knock on their door, and they say, you're going to have to give up the $33, $20 gold piece. And a great many of them are like, hell no, I'm not giving it up. Here, call my lawyer. So then the lawyer calls him up and says, give up the $20 gold piece because these boys are serious. And, you know, these coins were never officially issued. And your dealer used these backdoor channels to get them. And you really have to give them back.
Really?
We're facing some serious problems. So they gathered them all up and they pulled them out of collections of prominent collectors all over the country, instantly giving them star power. Well, Franklin Roosevelt was also friends with King Farouk of Egypt, and he gave him an export license for his because, you know, he's the king of Egypt, and he got special treatment. So he was given an export license. He didn't have to give his 33 St. Gaudens back. Fast forward 30 years, and the King Farouk collection, known as the Palace Collection, comes up for auction. And there in the middle of this auction in Egypt is a 1933 $20 gold piece. And so the collectors in the U.S. go wild, man. They swarm this auction, ready to buy this lone $1933 $20 gold piece. It's going to be the only one. And so it's quickly withdrawn from the sale. and disappears from circulation for another 40 years. Mm. Then, several years ago, it pops its head up again, and this time in the possession of a London coin dealer named Ned Fenton, who flies to the United States to meet with a colleague of mine in a New York City hotel room to make the exchange. He's going to sell him this 1933 $20 gold piece. And it turns out it was a sting operation. The FBI swarms him, they arrest him, they seize the coin, and once again, it's the star of the media. Well, he produces the export license to King Farouk and says, wait a minute, this is a legal coin. And the FBI and the Justice Department, you know, they really live up to their name, Justice. And they say, look, we'll split the proceeds of an auction if you'll agree to sell this coin in a public auction. Because we could fight you forever and take the coin and keep it off the market and deprive you of its profits. Or you can split the proceeds with us, which the guy quickly agrees to do. They hold a sale. And among great fanfare, one of the most exciting days I've ever seen at an auction, the coin sells for $7.5 million.
$7.5 million bananas. Whoa.
Which seemed like a lot of money then for the only known 1933. So the guy that buys it turns out to be one of these tech fund, hedge fund millionaires, billionaire perhaps. And he's just tickled pink that he bought the single rarest coin for just $7.5 million. He takes it home. All right, fast forward 5 more years, Patrick, just 2 years ago, and in Philadelphia, I can't believe I was connected to that too, the Langbourne family, their attorney is a friend of my attorney, so who, you know, they're talking amongst themselves, and my attorney says, oh, I know a coin guy, call Andy, and so he calls, and we speak, and it turns out that, well, the guy, Israel Swit, was a coin dealer in Philadelphia, got 10 of these things and stashed them away in a vault, in a safety deposit box. And his heirs found the coins. So that's 10 more of the 1933 $20.
They found 10 more?
10 more. 10. Yeah.
So does that guy's value go down? The one
we'll get to that.
Oh, man.
So my guy's lawyer goes to the Mint and says, hey, we've got these 10 $20 gold pieces from 1933. They say, let me see them. And then seize them. So while all this
what?
Is...
They,
yeah,
they took them?
Took them. Took them. Like, sorry, you're not supposed to have these. They
whoa,
took
them. Man.
So my guy tells, you know, the numismatic community that these coins have been discovered. And the person that bought the first one for $7.5 million calls his dealer and says, does this mean I have to buy the other 10? He still wants them all, even though now there's 11 of them. So he in his head, well, this story is still to resolve. We don't know what's going to happen to these 10 1933 $20 gold pieces. But there's an instance where 10 times as more coins come onto the market. And instead of doing what you would think that would happen, it would plunge and the price would deteriorate. It, in fact, generated so much interest in having a $33, $20 gold piece that I bet this guy's coin is now worth $15 million just in that short period of time. And incidentally, in the interim, while this coin languished in his vault, other coins have surpassed the $10 million mark, most notably the first silver dollar from the Cardinal Collection. Silver dollar, 1794, sells for $10 million. And several other coins in private treaty have brought in excess of $10 million. So what's going to happen if those 10 coins come onto the market? My prediction is we'll have the first $20 million United States coin. So rather than depressing the price, it caused the price to skyrocket. That's the 1933 $20 St. Gaudens.
The rest of the story, as Paul Harvey used to say. That's great. That's amazing. You know, it's so fascinating. Every now and then I hear these stories about people want stuff that only one of a kind. Did you hear about that painting in the... Was it
the Banksy?
The Banksy.
Yeah.
This painting.
Self-destruct.
It exploded after the guy paid $100 million for it or something like that?
Not exactly. It had a shredder built into the frame.
That's
as
crazy.
As Banksy would do. Yeah. And as soon as it hammered down, the thing, the shredder enacted, and the thing kind of spit out the bottom in shreds. It was pretty funny.
And now they say it's worth more.
Double. It's worth double.
A shredded painting is worth double is what it was.
Yeah, well, it was a clean shred, to be fair. You know, he went into 10 strips. It was, you know, even.
And then I heard a story when I was on the trip. There was a bottle of whiskey. That sold for how much?
Yeah, $1.5 million.
A bottle of whiskey?
Yes. Hmm.
Just because there was only one left or something?
Right, in Macallan.
Good.
It was a 60-year-old Macallan. So for you Scotch drinkers out there, you know.
That's nuts.
That's rare.
It's just people do that, right?
Yeah, well, when you have... Well, I know.
I know.
The old Frank Sinatra joke, right? Yeah. Frank Sinatra used to tip more than anybody else. Mm-hmm. And he walked up to the Plaza Hotel in New York City, and he says to the bellman, "What's the biggest tip you ever got?" And the bellman goes, $1,000. He goes, here's $1,200, right? Mm-hmm. And then Frank Sinatra turns around and says, "Hey, who gave you that $1,000 tip?" He said, "Well, you did, Mr. Sinatra." So, yeah. You know, once you get your thing, and that was Frank's thing, he wanted to be known as the biggest tipper.
The biggest tipper, right?
Yeah. So if you want to be known as the guy who owns, you know, one thing that no one else can own,
that's funny.
You'll spend whatever it takes to achieve that reputation.
Yeah, there's an old tale about Sinatra. He used to walk around with a roll of hundreds in his right-hand pocket, and that's what he did.
He gave out hundreds.
He
just handed them out. Yeah.
And a reporter, and I actually saw the interview where he's asked why he does it. He said, "Well, you got to keep it moving, baby," is what he said.
You got to keep it moving.
Keep it moving, baby. Yeah. Just keep it out, the outflow and inflow.
Gave away hundreds the way Elvis gave away Cadillacs.
That's right. Yeah, Patrick Timpone, Andrew Goss, it's The Real World of Money. We're going to get into some emails now and dig around some other tabs. They got 100 of them open. We'll only do about 10 or 20 or so. Look at some other things around the world. In the United States, we're going to be talking about who pays the most income taxes coming up and what the interest payments on the debt in the United States. And your emails, patrick@oneradionetwork.com. We're live here this morning, October 17th. 2018. Good morning. Previously with Dr. Rulin Chu about her product called Pearlseum. So let's talk about the teeth first. Explain to me what's going on, because there's something magical when you dip your little toothbrush in water. Why do they look so sparkly and just, I don't know, something very energetically about the look of them?
Yeah, it's very, very magical. So like a group of scientists in France discovered that when you put pearl next to the bones or skins or other connective tissues, and they find it stimulates new growth of the bones and skins and connective tissues, and also to make existing bones and the skins more healthy and stronger. So brush your teeth with the pearl, then your teeth will make your existing teeth stronger, and also it will filling up, you know, teeth with the pearlseum, and the pearl powder will stimulate the new bone growth and also make the existing teeth very strong.
It's really a great product. You'll love it. Take it internally or on your teeth, and you can click an order, see the ad right there, Pearlseum, the nice green container, Pearlseum, on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Some of us are Democrats, some Republicans, and some of us are independent. But we are all Americans, and all depend on the value of our U.S. dollar. Unfortunately, control of its value is not in our hands. If you want to preserve your wealth over time, you should acquire physical American gold and silver coins. Call us today at 1-800-468-2646, and we'll educate you about the acquisition of gold and silver United States coins. We are usgoldcoins.com. 1-800-468-2646.
And of course, is Andy's company, STL, out of Hawthorne and also in Hilton Head. And each morning when we play a commercial too for Andrew, we give you the gold prices. Gold is up $1.70 this morning, $12.27. Silver's about even at $14.75. The market's down 220. Had a big day yesterday, up and down. And I think the dollar is a little bit stronger today. Let me see. It's up 31 basis points to 95.40. And crude is down. Wow, I thought with all the Saudi Arabia thing might be going up, but it's down a couple bucks. Came out this morning, they have more on hand than they thought. And, you know, then the traders say, oh, well, let's sell some. So, you know, that's how it works. There we have it from Andy's company, SDL. His number up there if you'd like to talk to his staff. And he has a staff that's been there for a long time. He just doesn't have folks off the street. Hey, you want to sell some? No, they're all trained, and they're not going to sell you anything you don't want. It's 800-468-2646. People build relationships with all the different people, Donna and everybody else up there. And it's just a real family operation. And it's SDL, 800-468-2646. And really more and more kind of jazz with being introduced to Wayne Blakely and Living Streams. He's a fellow that helped his child with autistic behavior kind of turn himself around. It took a lot of years, but he really dug into the body and how it works, and he stumbled upon this whole idea of the immune system and probiotics, and he formed this company some years ago, Living Streams, and it's a very unique way of providing probiotics in a living form in liquid. So it's really fun and easy to take. You can put it in your water and put it in your smoothies. You can put it in your dog's mouth like I do with Doodle. And there's so many different kinds of probiotics that he uses. They're all DNA human grade. And he says they're far superior than what you get in a capsule, because he describes, and he doesn't talk, you know, bad about other companies, but he'll tell you, he knows how these things work with the capsules. And the technology is, well, it's just not as good. Let me leave it like that and keep it as positive as I can, as these living things. And then he has all these different nutrients in there, like the carbon 60 or zeolite, the product zeolite, and helps to get rid of heavy metals out of the body. That's what zeolite has been proven to do scientifically. Don't make any claims on it, like it's going to save your life or anything, but people have used these, and even though the FDA hasn't come in and said, yeah, we haven't checked these things out, these are nutrients, and they're, you know, they're just not covered by that. They're not drugs. They're just nutrients and superfoods and things like that that we promote. And people have used them, and they're, you know, they have a good experience with them. So my point is that as you get more of these into your gut, it's been shown that the immune system, there's about 85% of the immune system is in the gut. So there's no telling long term what I'm going to experience. I'm feeling better and better all the time, because your immune system just gets stronger, I think. And any guys that come in, you know, the body, the white blood cells and all the, you know, whatever they do, the killer cells, they just kind of do their thing. And they get rid of little creepy crawlies that we're exposed to. We think that doing the Chibide and also the Bifido has been shown that there's a good chance that it's going to help the body to get rid of glyphosates out of the body. Not sure exactly. We can't prove it. But that's what the science is showing that it can do, possibly. So that might be something. The glyphosates are showing up all around. They're all in our store. And oh, let me get this phone number. A little piece of paper fell down. There it is. If you'd like to learn more about it, you can call Marilyn. Her number is 360-912-2981. She works with Wayne Blakely. 360-912-2981. Ask her about some of the products. There's about 14 of them. They're all in our store. But if you do that, please go back to the store and order the products, and we'll get a commission on the deal. And you might just find that they're help you to feel better and get stronger and all the stuff. 360-912-2981.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
We talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com. Once again, here's Patrick.
And here's Andrew Goss, who's a man about town up in there in Hawthorne, New Jersey. So, do you head down to your southern place in Hilton Head soon?
Yeah, I was thinking about it yesterday. You know, it was 40 degrees here in New York City. So that's sort of,
this might be time, right?
That's the alarm point. You know, 40. It's 40. It's in the 40s now. We start packing, And then when the snow hits the ground, we start driving. So.
Yeah, it's really fun. There are folks that claim about, you know, the 1% and all this, and they're the bad guys, and they're causing the world to go to a hell in a handbasket.
Right.
If you look at the amount of taxes that are paid, It's pretty interesting, really. I think individual taxes fiscal year 2018, if I have my notes right here, Andrew, $1.7 trillion.
Right. 80% of which was individual income tax or payroll tax.
And the top 1% pay 40% of this.
Well, I got a better figure for you.
Wow. Is that possible that the top 50%? Here it
pay 100%
of it. So the top 50% of taxpayers in this country pay all of it. So these people running around complaining about the top 1%,
oh, my favorite,
they're not paying any taxes.
That's right. My favorite line
What's
is...
What's up with that?
Oh, we want you to pay, we just want everyone to pay their fair share.
Well, what is That's fair it. Here?
Well, what is fair? If 50% of us pay 100% of the tax, how is that fair?
Doesn't seem right.
It doesn't seem fair. What about the other 50%? They don't pay any? Zero. Yeah, that's not right. So, naturally, in a democracy, the 50% that pay nothing are going to want to elect people who believe that 50% of the people should pay nothing.
Should pay nothing. And that's get right. free health care and free college.
Oh, and free.
Free cell phones.
And free.
And free food.
And free.
And free.
Free.
And
Did I mention free? More free. So
wow.
I don't think that's fair. I'm not, for me, a progressive income tax is unfair.
Progressive means as you make more, you pay
more. The more you make, the more you pay, not because you're making more, so you're paying more. That seems like, oh, well, sure, you made 100 instead of 10, so you paid more. But no, as a percentage. So your tax rate in the United States starts out at 15% and then struggles its way all the way to 40%. So, you know, 40% when some other folks are paying 15 doesn't seem fair, but that's the way our system is structured. The more you make, the more of a percentage you pay. Mm-hmm.
So the 1.7, where does the other half come in?
Meaning?
A 1.7 trillion in taxes.
Right, and 3.5 trillion in spending.
No, well, but isn't 1.7 only half of the federal revenue? Did I read that correctly, according to the CBO?
Well,
is that correct? Actually, the federal revenue is close to $4 trillion?
Yeah.
Okay, well, where does the other 1.7 come in?
Well, we operate our company, the United States, Inc.
Corp.
Yeah. We operate it on a cash basis.
Yeah, of course.
Not an accrual basis.
Okay, tell us the difference here.
Well, the difference is if money comes in, it's in.
December 30th, it's in.
It doesn't matter where it comes from. It's money.
Or let's say September 29th, because that's a fiscal year, right?
Yeah, so if you take a look at, you know, 2016, you got the individual income tax at around $1.5 trillion, payroll tax at around $1 trillion, corporate income tax.
Oh, that's where the rest of it is. Okay.
$350 billion. Mm-hmm. And then ad valorem. Tariffs and user fees and payments from, you realize we get 12% of every oil dollar found on federal lands and things like that.
Really? Good for us.
Yeah, good for us. Exactly. So all those other taxes combined, that's how we get to our $3.25 trillion total revenue.
Mm-hmm.
But payroll tax is $1 trillion, $1.1 trillion. That's not supposed to be spent on bridges and roads. That's supposed to be put aside for Social Security, which is the problem with the whole off-the-book Social Security thing, is that we're looting it. We take the money that's devoted to paying for your future retirement, and we just spend it today and owe it. That's our model.
And that's not going to really stop it.
No, it's not. Yeah. And Senator Ernest Hollins, rest his soul, the Democrat from South Carolina.
Yeah, Senator Hollins.
quoted him in Secret World of Money. He's saying, oh no, Uncle Sam Cooks the Books. He said, the best way to save Social Security is to stop looting it. The man was brilliant.
Good old Senator Hollins.
Yeah, man, he was good.
I don't know. I figured out that I was one thousands of an Italian. So
are you?
So I want my share of the Vatican.
That much Italian are you? Yeah.
I did a DNA study, you know. So I'm gonna get my
share. Poor Elizabeth. That was such a
what
are her PR people?
What a
man,
catastrophe that
worst
thing was.
Thing she could have.
So tell her
done.
What she's what he's talking about is Elizabeth Warren, and somehow she came out years ago saying that she was part Indian, right?
Yeah.
And so she wants to run for president in 2020. So Trump's, you know, he's been giving her a hard time ever since, and he calls her Foxahontas, right?
No, that now it's Foahontas.
Foahontas.
But it was Pocahontas before that.
So yeah. She does a DNA test a couple of weeks ago and figures out that they said she's 1/24th or something like that, Indian.
But then the math was bad.
So
yeah,
it was bad. So they lied.
They did bad math on purpose because it was so bad. It was so bad. They said, "Jesus, we can't tell people she's 1/1000th. She's 1/10% Indian and calls herself an Indian. Come on."
And then,
excuse me,
not the DNA.
A Native American.
The DNA people are saying that you could do everybody in this country, and
everybody would. That's right.
We'd all be the same. You know?
Yeah. Well, I've always known of the United States as a melting pot. And when people ask me what I am, although my mother was 100% French, as far as I know, and my father was 100% Italian, as far as I know.
Oh, good.
Right?
Well, so, you're half good.
Yeah, thanks.
Just kidding.
But you know what people say? Well, what's your nationality? You know what my answer is, right? American, baby.
American, man.
I'm an American. I was born in the United States of America, and that's where I'm from. So I don't know where you're from, Pocahontas, but I'm from the United States of America. And I just think, well, and this is what the fear of, as I speak to people about this issue, you know, you realize this, and when I did the movie Obama, when President Obama was first elected, that was one of the things that I pointed out, that this idea of set-asides and affirmative actions, oh, we're not going to let you into this school, even though you're brilliant, and, you know, 1600 on your SATs, because we have to reserve this slot for this particular race of people, the indigenous Americans, the African American, the Chinese American, what have you. In fact, the Chinese American or Japanese American was discriminated against even worse because there's so many of those smart races in the college. Oh, well, we can't have any more smart Asian people here. We only want...
We can only have so many.
So, yeah, in order to make the diversity, we sacrifice excellence. And I was absolutely appalled. But as a result, people wanted to be, well, I could call myself an Indian, and that'll get me in. If I call myself a, you know, whatever you label yourself as, whatever you identify as. And for me, it's just the whole thing went into the toilet. I was raised and taught to believe by science now, that, you know, XX chromosome is a man, or XX is a woman, and XY is a man. That's science, isn't it, Patrick?
Last time I checked, yeah.
Apparently it is, and apparently now you can say whatever you are. There's how many different genders, and there's an entire study program on what a gender is. So we've perverted reality to the point that now calling yourself other than a man or woman might give you a benefit or an advantage over your competitor. Calling yourself an Indian might give you an advantage over your competitor.
It's pretty weird,
That is weird.
Pretty weird.
I think what Elizabeth Warren proved, thank you, John, by the way, one of our listeners who said this, and I can't take credit for it, that she proved that she is the whitest woman in America. That's about it. That's about all she proved.
And the president says, I'll pay off that $1 million bet.
Yeah, sure.
If I can do the test myself. Pay his,
no, what I would do if I were the president, okay, you're 1/1000th Indian. Here's your 1/1000th of a million bucks.
There you go.
You know, here it is.
That's
where
right.
would you like?
Oh, I like that.
I'll pay you
that's
for the year.
That's perfect. Yeah.
Well, come on.
I like it.
For her to suggest, to anyone who's had a look at Elizabeth Warren, think that she is Native American, well, something is definitely not right in that Irish body.
This is an email. Since the president is so down on the Fed of late, which I find interesting that he's so public about it,
yeah,
is it feasible that he might consider Andy's idea
of
snatching the Fed back into the Treasury, or is he worried about the F-16s firing off some SAMs at the White House? He must know who the pilots work for, right? Remember the cardinal rules of capitalism. You got to spend money to make money, just never spend your own.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, that's pretty true.
That is true.
Just don't spend your
own,
man. And
President Trump knows that.
Yeah.
People have asked me about this concept and the state-owned bank concept. Do you remember that one?
Sure. Right now, we just have one, North Dakota, right?
Right. But, gosh, I should have just kept my mouth shut because these clowns in New Jersey now are going to, we're going to have a New Jersey State Bank. Thanks.
Really?
I'm sorry. I apologize. I'll keep my mouth shut. But there have been questions coming from, what do I call them? They're not official quarters, but they're officials. So when I go to these political dinners and things of that nature, these are the questions that I'm asked about. Well, explain to me how this would work. And I just find that very curious in that I've had these opinions for 30 years and no one's cared.
Oh, you mean if the Treasury took over the Fed and just printed the money themselves? Yeah.
Because there's been a national call from the Von Mises, the Libertarian Society, that everyone is very familiar with. Ron Paul, audit the Fed and abolish the Fed, right? Those two choices have been given to us in public.
And there's a third choice.
Yeah, but no one ever talks about
take
the
over
third
the Fed.
One, do they? No, that seems to be one. Oh, no, we don't want to talk about that.
We don't talk about that.
But suddenly I'm getting
more and more
interest in this very concept, that why doesn't the federal government take over the Fed? Well, because they're supposed to be independent. They have to be independent because they're independent, you know, and it's for our best, our greater good that they're independent. I don't buy it for a minute. Nationalize the Fed. That's what you do.
Yeah, but most people think the Fed is Fed.
That's right.
They already
even
think
people
the Fed
in
is
government,
federal,
right? Yes,
they,
yes.
Even people in government think the Federal Reserve is federal.
It's part of the federal government.
It's federal, right?
Yes, it's got it right
of course,
in the
so
word.
Is Federal Express.
And the other word, reserve.
Reserve, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a really brilliant name, isn't it? Federal Reserve.
Yes, they thought about it.
Yeah, oh, I guess.
The Federal Reserve Association. Yes, this wasn't an accidental naming. They definitely
of course, then
about
people
it.
Argue that Powell and Yellen and Bernanke, they were all federal employees, so you're saying it's federal, but you've told us that that's the board, that's not the
correct
bank.
It's not where
the
money
board
is.
Doesn't do anything except interest rates. And
that's
the banks,
all they do.
The banks monetize debt.
They control everything.
They control everything.
Yeah, yeah.
And the people that used to be president of the Fed and named some of them off will probably know who they are.
McChesney Martin.
Hank Paulson.
Ben Bernanke.
Ben Bernanke. Yeah. Tim Geithner.
Oh, sure.
Wow.
And they're all, well, anyway.
Yeah, and they all
when
end
I,
up, well.
I've gotten myself in debates with academics and government officials. And here's my number one reason that they give me why the Fed cannot be taken over by the government.
What's their main reason?
Well, if you give Congress the power to create money directly, pretty soon they're going to be spending way more than they take in taxes.
Whoops.
So if you allow them, with all due respect to drunken sailors, if you allow them to spend money at their own choosing, then they're going to spend like drunken sailors.
And
well,
and your retort is?
When has the Fed ever said to Congress, you can't spend more than you take in? When have they ever said to Congress, you can't do that, it wouldn't be prudent, sound fiscal policy? They allow Congress to spend as much as they want, regardless of how much they take in taxation. So the Constitution was written in such a way that the House of Representatives had to initiate all bills for taxation. So if you're going to tax the people, you have to start that in the House of Representatives. You can't start it in the Senate. You have to start in the House of Representatives. Why? Well, because we reelect those guys every 2 years. And if your Congress foolishly decides to raise your taxes, you're going to vote them out at the next opportunity.
That was the idea behind it.
That was the idea.
Yeah.
Yes. And so by making an entity like the Federal Reserve Bank separate and distinct from Congress, and Congress is free to spend as much as it wants through appropriation, and the Fed's responsibility is to prevent or allow them to not raise taxes instantly, to kick the can down the road, as they like to say. So to make it so that the bill for their spending won't come due within their term, which is what our forefathers intended, so that we could vote the bums out who put us in that position. Instead, they're allowed to borrow tax anticipation from the Fed and thereby roll the problem onto a generation that has not yet been elected. How do these guys manage to stay in the House 30, 40 years? That's how.
Because nobody gets it.
Because they're not responsible for their spending. If they were, if they were held to account, if all federal spending, okay, well, hey, look, we didn't gather enough from income tax last year, so we're either going to have to slash the budget and cut out some of the sweetheart spending, or we're going to have to raise taxes. Those are our only two choices. We can't turn to the Fed and say, monetize this extra $1 trillion that we created.
And the key ingredient is, you taught us, that the Fed Reserve Bank of New York creates the dollars
Correct.
On a computer
Correct.
And exchanges it for an IOU,
a treasury bond. Bill or
and
note.
So you're arguing just take that power, put it into
exactly.
the treasury. Why
exactly.
why create a bond? Why create more interest? And why do any of that? Why do?
Well, if we've already absolved the Congress of responsibility for their taxing and spending, which is what we've done, which is contrary to the Constitution. So I can't say that if we could just, oh, no, that's wrong. We have to live with the Constitution. So we're limited in what we can use as money as gold and silver coin. And all bills for taxation have to originate in the House. Those two things alone, if we just followed them, then we wouldn't need a Federal Reserve Bank. Yeah, you could go with Ron Paul's suggestion, abolish the Fed, have them gone altogether. But if we're going to do this, we're going to have a fiat system, and it's going to reduce the value of the dollar necessarily over the long term, then the benefit from that should accrue to the people, not to private banks.
It's Andrew Goss, Patrick Timpone, The Real World of Money. And if you don't think interest payments somehow get to the point of some real money, $523 billion a year
right.
is our current interest payments, the highest ever in the history of this country. That's a half a trillion dollars right. in interest payments.
Let me point something else out that
Whoa.
Maybe people aren't
That's
getting.
That's a lot.
When the long-term 30-year Treasury bond was trading at 2.5%.
And when was this?
Last year.
Okay.
A 0.25, a quarter point rate increase. And I've heard those talking heads. Oh, what's a quarter point? It's a quarter point after all. It's only a quarter point. That's 10% increase in interest rates to the federal government. So each time the Fed raises interest rates a quarter point from last year, that's added 10% to the interest cost.
Yeah, people don't realize.
They
and that's
do
what
not.
The president's really hot
I
about,
I hope
too.
So.
Oh, no, he's talked about it.
Well,
you know, not a lot.
We are just at the beginning
Whoa.
Of the interest rate cycle.
Yeah, so this thing could get up to $1 trillion.
Easily. It could get up to $1 trillion easily.
Just in interest payments.
Correct. Because in addition to the interest, which we're failing to cover, we are also $1 trillion in deficit in our spending. So not only are we not paying the principal down, which is generating this 523 annual interest payment, but we're adding $1 trillion to it every year. Now, when the Clinton-Trump fiasco was unfolding, I said it didn't matter which of these two folks won, that situation would not change. And this has borne out. I mean, we printed an $825 billion deficit last year, and I mean that before October 1st. And according to CBO, this year, another trillion added to the principal. Accruing interest. Folks, when we reach that point, you know, that is the fatal disease of republics. When we're forced to borrow what's necessary to pay the interest on our debts, we're in a debt spiral. And it cannot get better. It can only get worse.
But we're doing that now, to be fair.
Correct.
Right?
We're in a debt
spiral. We don't
have
the $500 billion.
No.
So that's being created.
We're
right?
already borrowing to pay the interest on our debt. And adding to the principal every year. These were known for home purchases out there as the negative amortization mortgages, which were big in the 80s. You know, that was, oh, you want to buy this $1 million house, but you can't afford $10,000 a month? Great. Mm-hmm. We'll just add the $10,000 a month to the principal, and you just pay us $1,000 a month.
Jack writes in, people want to abolish the Fed, and Andy's talking about taking over the Fed. What taxes could be removed? I wonder how many taxes are related to the Federal Reserve. So what's he saying there?
Their cost. I hope that's what he's saying. Hmm. You know, the cost to run that system. I talked about the Fed in one of my newsletters when I dissected their spending back in, I don't know, 93, 4, 5, I think something like that. They're incredibly wealthy. They have all these office buildings that they own, all the buildings, real estate that they own. That comes off the top. They have 47 Learjets with pilots and crew. That comes off the top. And they have a $30 million art collection in the private areas of their billion-dollar office buildings that are, well, they're not ever seen by the public because they're in private areas. So a $30 million art collection with a full-time curator that just looks after the art. All of that taken out would reduce taxes significantly. So if that's what the writer is suggesting, that if the Federal Reserve had to come into the well of Congress like every other government agency and say, this is what we need to operate this year, this is our cost to operate, and then Congress could either appropriate that or not, but that's not how the Federal Reserve is funded. They decide what they're going to spend. They take it off the top. And when their cost to put a $100 bill into circulation is 2 cents, the other $99.98 is theirs. They decide what they're going to spend that on. And if they decide to whatever, that all comes off the top. They don't have to ask Congress, is it okay if we have, what was my last count, 274 six-figure vice president.
Oh, God.
You know, executives.
And the people have argued, too, and of course Ron Paul was one of them, since they're private banks. I don't know, he never really got that you couldn't audit them for some
reason.
They've
never been audited.
Of course, well, they're private. How can you just go in and audit? I mean, you know, that's,
right.
You know, you need a lot of FBI dudes to do that. You know?
Or Marines,
you know, bringing the Marines. But then it's been argued that there's a lot of off-the-book stuff, like pallets of $100 bills that go to tin-horn dictators around the world, that somehow comes from the Fed. That's where that money comes from.
Well, it comes from the Fed, but it's
somehow,
through the Treasury.
Through the Treasury, right.
President Obama
says he needs, I need a pallet of 100s to give to Iran.
How does that work? I need $180 billion to give to Iran.
Right.
Here's $180 billion in bonds.
Oh.
Put the pallets on a plane.
And send them. Simple as that.
But
you're saying is, why not just yell down to the stairs to the Treasury, you guys create the $180 billion, we're going to send it to Iran. Why would you let the private banks do it? It just doesn't make sense.
I've looked at so many ways to analogize this so that people could get it, but it would be like this. Mm. Did you play the Powerball last night?
Mm-hmm.
You say you won $300 million.
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
mm-hmm.
I won $300 million.
Mm-hmm.
So you take $300 million, you put it in the bank account, and they give you a checkbook. You hand the checkbook to your best friend, or maybe your worst enemy, depending on what they are, but you hand the checkbook to a third party who then writes the checks and loans you the money.
That's
what we've done.
It
just seems insane to me that we have the printing press, we have the machinery, the Bureau of Engraving and Printing does a wonderful job. The Treasury Management Division does a wonderful job. They have computers. They have everything that the Fed has. They could even hire the talent. And the point is that they don't. They delegate that entire responsibility to the Federal Reserve. So monetary policy in the United States is not set by Congress. It's not dictated by the president. It's dictated by the Fed. Now, they're not political.
Sure.
chuckle. They're not political. And here's the other part of that. Trust us. We're not political. Give us this power and we won't abuse it. That's what we were told. And we once again fell for it hook, line, and sinker. And here we are 110 years later. The Federal Reserve is the single most valuable cartel on the planet. And it's all privately owned. And the United States is $22 trillion in bonded debt and another $70 trillion in undeclared, unfunded liabilities. That's like $100 trillion in the hole in the time that the Federal Reserve has been independent.
And a little perspective, 10 years ago, the banks were in trouble, right?
Yeah.
All of them. Lehman,
Goldman,
all of them. AIG,
Citigroup,
all of them were in trouble. Yeah. So the United States
bailed them out
at the end of Bush, then Obama, right? They borrowed, they created $800 billion of notes, borrowed it from the Fed.
Correct.
And then that money went back.
And they
back
gave it to the banks that own the Fed.
That yeah. was a TARP thing.
Yeah, that was the TARP.
Whoa. Could you imagine somebody put, you know, Obama putting that on a whiteboard and said, this is what we've just done here, folks. What do you think about this?
Or 5 years into the deal, if you recall, I was having a good time. Goldman Sachs had warrants that were worth $90 billion issued to the Fed, to the Treasury. So it was an equity investment. So we did not loan the banks the money. For that would have created.
That's right. We actually bought some stock.
Yeah, we bought warrants, which meant we can buy your stock anytime in the next 5 years for a fixed amount. Oh. Warren Buffett got the same thing, and he cashed his in, and he made a big payday. But when we cashed ours in, we got half the market value on purpose. Like we said to the Goldman Sachs organization, you have warrants outstanding that are worth $90 billion to us, we'll take 45. Why? Well, why would we do that? I looked at their stock price yesterday. They're doing fine. But it seems that not only did we indirectly bail them out by taking equity positions in these banks, which shored up their balance sheet, but then when it came time to exercise the warrant or redeem our investment prospects, we actually cut them a deal, every one of them, so that they paid back less than the market value of what they, and I'm using my air quotes, borrowed, because they didn't really borrow it. We took an equity position in these banks. My point is, we were halfway to taking over the Fed. We should have just kept going. And I assure you, if Donald Trump would have been president, we would not have made those sweetheart deals. At very least, we would have reduced the national debt by a couple of hundred $1 billion just on the
let
strength
go.
Of instead of letting them keep the money, my goodness, and then turn around and fine them $1 billion for misleading the entire investing community as to the efficacy or value of their mortgage-backed securities. You know, oh, we'll give you 45, but you're going to have to give us back $1 billion in public, and you know, pretend that you're sorry that you did this.
Yeah, Andy Goss is here. Peter writes in for him. You were talking about the new trade deal with Canada and Mexico. I was listening to a pundit say that this new deal was not good. He said Trump trusted the wrong negotiators, and it's loaded with all kinds of bad stuff that was in the TTP. Are you aware of the details of this? Do you know if this has been signed?
Well, I know enough details to know that the number one area that we were being abused in were the foodstuffs, the dairy farmers, the American farmers selling their goods to Canada were faced with huge tariffs. And the automobile industry that was importing automobiles into the United States, primarily made in Canada, with zero tariffs. So is this trade deal the best that it can be? No. Is it better than NAFTA? By a long shot. I think Ross Perot is very smiling because it did reverse a lot of the issues. And with Mexico, we had a $54 billion annual trade deficit. So their barriers to entry are gone. Is it a perfect deal? No. Is it better than NAFTA? Yes.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I mean, pundits worldwide continue to report daily on why everything that this president does is bad. So,
right.
I mean, you know, you just have to keep
the ties
that.
Don't match.
You have to keep that into. I heard a story yesterday on NPR. I can't believe I even still listen to them.
I know.
But I, you know, you advise that you guys to listen to some of the wacky stuff just
right.
to see what's going on. They did a whole 4-minute story on how Jared Kushner knows the head dude at Saudi Arabia, and you know, that's a problem because he has met with him, and now he's possibly killed somebody. You know, it means like,
oh yeah, he met with somebody who killed somebody.
Just dig around at anything to try.
Well, this you saw that New York Times piece. All right, so you know, you have federal revenues of $1 billion. And the depreciation on real estate, you know how that works, right? So if I buy a $1 million building, I can depreciate a certain amount of it every year.
Sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. And I get to take that legitimate tax deduction on my tax return.
Right.
And Mr. Trump, as everyone knows, is an owner of real estate.
That's what this whole tax thing was
about. Sure. He uses his depreciation to offset his normal income and doesn't pay taxes on that money. Shame on him for using the tax code to reduce his taxes. That's the whole thing.
That was the whole thing was about.
Yes.
You know, no wonder he just laughed it off.
Of course. It's like, how dare you take a depreciation on this building and reduce your income tax? That's the way the tax law is written, for goodness sake. And, you know, the man has 250. Remember we talked about he's releasing his tax returns. That wouldn't matter. He's got 250 LLCs. So,
And you just watch. I don't have TV, but you know the next 2 weeks is going to be all about the Trump's family and connections with Saudi Arabia. You know what it's going to be about. Going to be about that. Hey, so check this out. U.S. Treasury sells the first time ever 2 month bill. So they sell 1 and 2 month Treasury bills, right? They're called a bill when they're short and a note when they're long.
A note and a bond when they're long.
Like long. Oh, so there's bills, bonds, and notes.
That was like, I think that's question one in the secret world of money.
Bills, bonds, and notes.
Yeah. Bills, bonds, and notes. Oh, my.
What's the difference? So when it's a bill, it's between one.
Short term. Yeah.
Zero to 1 year.
Yeah.
And then a note would be 1 to 10.
1 to 10, and then a bond, 10 to 30.
So actually, if you would lend the government money for 4 weeks or 8 weeks, that'd be a pretty safe place to put your money, really.
Yeah, well, that's
But how much did they pay you for that?
Pennies, fraction.
Penny. Nothing, yeah. Huh?
Yeah. But you know that
it would be safe, though.
For the last 18 months, let's see, it's October 2018. Yeah. So, since President Trump's election, and even before, I said that if President Trump was elected, it might not be the best thing for the gold market. You remember that?
I do.
Yeah, okay. It's important because in all reality, I should have been campaigning for Hillary Clinton. Because from a narrow perspective of what it would do to gold and silver coins, Hillary's win would have been, a wonderful, we would have boomed in the amount of money.
The gold, the price of gold and the dollar and all that.
But the rest of the economy would have suffered greatly. Mm-hmm. So given that Mr. Trump was elected and his policies put into place strengthened the dollar, and put us in a position of a strong dollar and a strong economy, low unemployment, and blah, 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 blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
You know the rest. You would think that they would be on his side, but they're not.
Eric writes in, when we get to Mars, let's hope the Martians will lend us some cash. I wonder if they have some gold coins from 1933 in their vaults. That's probably why Elon wants to go to Mars. He thinks there's gold up there.
I told you my friend Ken DelVecchio, right?
Gold, and then there he is.
Ken DelVecchio. You know, Andy, I don't believe they ever went to the moon. Why, Ken? Well, because if they went to the moon, they'd be strip mining it by now. That's pretty good. You know, I was like, okay, yeah.
See, I'm with Ken, too. I don't think they went there.
If they went there, they'd be strip mining it by now. They wouldn't go there once and not exploit it again.
Yeah, I don't think
Okay. Whether they did or not, I just thought that was hilarious. It is indeed a fact that we need as much money as we can get. But as I've used this analogy, we love analogies. Yeah, you have a party at your house. You're expecting 8 people and 16 people show up. So you get out the pizza cutter and you just cut the 8-slice pizza into 16 slices and you hand them out. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have 8 people doing without a slice. You just cut all your slices in half and everybody gets a slice. Pretty soon it's a sliver, but you can feed the whole party with one pizza. And that's what we've done with money. Each time more money is needed, we simply make the unit itself smaller. So, you know, a $1941 dollar is worth 8 cents today. A $1913 dollar is worth a penny today. So what is a $2040 dollar going to look like? It's going to be at least half of what it is right now, and you should be planning accordingly. You should just arrange your affairs so that you know 20 years from now, a dollar is going to be worth 50 cents in terms of what it'll buy.
Mm-hmm. Just listening to the October 3rd show with Andy, could you suggest that Andy, you and your listeners, work to put something together like a digital brochure, a one-page synopsis that outlines the reality of the Fed as it relates to them earning money in our money, maybe something on social media. Do you know what he's wanting?
Well, I know exactly what he's suggesting. Here's the thing. So I've used the profits from my coin company and my labor to finance public education for the last 30 years. I really have. And I know I could spend even more of my money developing educational materials to help people understand their plight. I know I could, but I'm not gonna. You know what? I'm not. I'm done. In fact,
it's not your job.
It's not. I'm not gonna make it my job anymore. As my family has so rightly pointed out, the amount of money that I've spent doing this is it's enormous. If I would have just kept that money, kept my mouth shut, it would be a different world for my family today. But I literally have driven myself in debt over the last 30 years.
But that's a blessing, you know.
Well, yeah, maybe it is. I got the message out, but I feel like I'm Don Quixote tilting at windmills here. Mm-hmm. So I get no help from the outside. And, we're right behind you, Andy. Okay, thanks. You mind getting up here beside me and maybe one or two of you in front of me? So not a single entity, person, individual has said, hey, here's a chunk of money. Go ahead and develop me this one-page digital brochure. I'd love to do it. But am I going to fund it? No. In fact, I'm done funding those types of things.
I think you're on to a really deep spiritual issue is that I think our job is to be the best that we can do at what we do. Right?
Yeah.
And have the information and have the awareness of this. And when people come to us, mm-hmm. and ask us to say, could you just kind of show me and help me out here? I'm going to pay or whatever.
Yeah. You know,
I'm happily to do it. But to go out and try to change the world, I think, is a fool's errand.
I can't afford it. Simple.
But Pete, the world doesn't want to be changed.
Well, you know, maybe it doesn't.
They don't. I mean,
you know what? When I was young and wet behind the ears.
Well, yeah, we all did.
I was 20 years old. I had this idea that if the American people understood what I did, mm-hmm. that they would get behind me and we would change it.
Yeah, it ain't happening.
Not after this long. Mm-hmm. I really have done my best, and that's all that I can do.
Sharon took a picture of me a couple of days ago offering people the red pill.
I loved it.
It's a great picture.
That was a fabulous picture.
Sharon's an amazing photographer.
She is an amazing photographer.
She's really good. Yeah. But you can just offer the red pill. You can't shove it down their throat. You know, you just offer.
That's true.
You know, you just offer.
Good point, Pat.
A couple months ago, you mentioned a blood pressure book that you sent Andy. What was the name of that? I'd like to take a look at it. Do you remember the name of it?
Yeah, The Blood Pressure Hoax.
Dr. Sherry Rogers.
Yes, indeed.
The Blood Pressure Hoax.
Yeah.
Okay.
Great book.
Yeah.
Get it, read it. It's what caused me to ask my cardiologist, what causes?
You don't want to do that, man.
What causes high blood pressure?
He'll kick you out of the office.
Oh, no. He started rattling off the list. Smoking, obesity, lack of a sedentary lifestyle, lack of exercise, and so forth. And none of that causes high blood pressure. It might contribute to high blood pressure. I don't want to come off as a high blood pressure expert, but as you all know, I suffer, and thank you, Patrick, for taking that suffering away without the aid of pharmaceuticals, which they would, you know, they were lined up to give me those I could get anywhere, anytime. I could fix, using my air quotes again, my high blood pressure by blocking the signals that come from my kidneys or my liver to my heart and say, hey, we need to filter more blood. Your body's contaminated with glyphosates and other pathogens, and we need to get it out of here. And the only way we can do that is if you send more blood. So let's kick up the pump a little bit and get more blood down here. That is what causes high blood pressure. So if I remove the source of infection and the necessity for the kidneys and the liver to work overtime to clean my blood, then that's how you reduce high blood pressure. That's how. Not with a pharmaceutical.
I hope you're
aid.
Not giving medical advice. Oh, yeah, I don't.
I hope not. Was that medical advice?
No, it wasn't medical advice.
Did I say, because I said that's how I reduce my. That's how I reduce my high. So, yeah, I'm not and by any means a doctor, nor do I hold a hundredth or a thousandth, maybe, of Patrick's knowledge in what causes things. But I'm curious. And so when I find something that I'm curious about, like that cheap thread on the sweater, the way that I did with the monetary system, I keep pulling that thread until I finally get to the terminus. And if it means that the sweater's going to fall apart, well, so be it. But I cannot rest until I get to the end. The worst thing my mother and father could ever say was, because I said so. Instead, all you had to do is give me a legit reason why, you know, I can't play outside in my bare feet while it's raining. That's all. You don't have to say, because I said so, because that's going to make me go out and want to do it that much more.
Here's our fake news story of the day. Segments of DNA have been put together to revive horsepox, a previously eradicated virus. Scientists have been flipping out over the possibility that these bad actors may use it to study a blueprint to do a pandemic. This disease killed an estimated, this is the best part, 300 million people before the World Health Organization deemed it eradicated following a long vaccination campaign.
Oh, boy.
Do you believe that story?
Sure, I believe that's
That's a great story.
There's the Hegelian dialectic.
They had a vaccine that stops something that killed 300 million people? They just make this stuff up or what?
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah.
What were you about to say? Sorry.
That the Hegelian dialectic. We got this horse pox, and it's going to absolutely kill 300 million people. And here's what we need to do. We need to mandatorily vaccinate everybody on the planet.
Yeah.
And then people say, where do I get my vaccine? I don't want the horse pox. Yeah.
So what do you do as a libertarian if someday, I mean, we hope this doesn't happen, but someday, some dude with a FBI or HSS on their back or whatever they have, knock on your door and say, Mr. Krause, we're doing a door-to-door vaccination thing to vaccinate against the horsepox. What would you say?
What would you say? That doesn't happen like a thunderclap, Patrick.
Yeah, you would know it's coming, right?
Yeah.
You would know it's coming. Yeah. Just don't answer the door at that point.
Don't be behind the door at that point. Yeah, don't be behind the door.
You say, nobody's here. One of those things.
Dave's not here. Yeah, that's it.
If you were wondering what's gonna happen to how to revive the housing problem, Bank of America has
three houses. Yeah.
Well, they're backing a $10 billion program
NASC,
from
yeah.
Boston-based brokerage neighborhood
that's
assistance
right.
corporation, NAC. Yeah. See, you're onto this stuff. Offer zero down mortgages.
That's right. No money down. And subprime.
Do this again.
Yes. Well,
90% approval rate, too. Interest is 4.5%. No money down, no income, nothing, baby.
And no default rate.
No default
either.
Rate.
Yeah. I mean, they're
going to do this again.
Well, in this instance, you remember this whole meme that was that the bad borrowers
caused the whole crisis.
Caused the whole crisis.
Which you poo-pooed early on.
Can I say bullshit? I'm sorry.
No, you can't,
I can't say that.
That.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
You can say bullshoy.
I say bullshit. Stop.
No, yeah. Bullshoy is the
bullshoy.
Way. Bullshoy ballet.
That's
yeah.
total bullshoy.
Bullshoy, man.
It was the mortgage-backed securities and the leverage attendant with those, and then the wringing of the lemon. So the same way you get the juice out, right? So we would take $1 million worth of mortgages, bundle them together, and then create $2 million or $3 million worth of securities. Then we take our commissions and leave the lemon rind and skin and the dead pulp. That's what's left behind. That's what happened to the mortgage market. So they could have paid off all the individually defaulted mortgages for $180 billion at the time that they gave the banks $700 billion to deal with the problem. So it is an absolute false narrative. What caused the problem were people that didn't live in these houses. Friends of mine, wealthy folks, bought houses that they never intended to live in. Why? Well, the same reason people bought Bitcoin. Because they were going up, man. You buy a house, it's going up. And then you sell it, and you keep the profit. That's why you buy it. You have no use for that second house, or third, or fifth, or tenth, or whichever one you're buying. And those were the folks that strategically defaulted. They said, you keep it. I'm out. But the folks who lived in their home,
They were paying their mortgage.
They fought the tooth and nail. Yeah, it was like the payment rate was very high. It was 84%, 85%. The 15% that were in default, if you gave them another option, they would have continued to pay. So what NASC has proven, and I think it's true, that the individual home buyer will do everything they can to keep their home. Their home. The investment buyer, they'll default at the first drop of a hat.
Yeah. So if you give, so you're not against giving somebody, low-income people, a break. Let them have their own spot and give them something, give them some motivation.
The monetization of debt, to keep working and everything, right? The monetization of debt is the absolute key to power in this monetary system. And if you preclude an entire class of folks because of their income level, then
Oh, that's well said. Yeah. So it's not this is a bad or good thing. It's a yes, no, maybe, just depending on how you do it and who you're doing it to.
Well, what I like about
if you hold them responsible to
there
make
you
the
go.
Notes. Yeah,
that's what I like about NASC. You know, it's not just here, come on in and get a free house.
Okay, it's not like the ninjas of 2006.
No, in fact, right? You have to take counseling. You have to understand the mortgage, how it works, what you must pay, what your obligations are through your life. You have to demonstrate that you can balance your checkbook. I'll tell you why it's exciting to me. You remember we were talking about this minimum basic income thing.
Right.
And I said that I'll listen. First, I'm diametrically opposed to the concept, but I'll listen. And the only way that I would accept the idea of mailing someone a check every month is if they were accountable. If there was some measurable milestone.
What are you going to do for it?
Can you balance your checkbook? Yeah. Do you know what a mortgage is? Do you know how they work? Do you know what causes the rate to go up or the value to go down? Do you have any concept of the money markets? Can you recite the Constitution? Can you summarize the Bill of Rights? Can you tell us the three branches of government?
But even with all that, Andrew, you still can't just give people money for nothing just because they studied some stuff, can you?
Yeah, you can.
Wouldn't you have to tie them into doing some kind of work or getting a job?
That is work, Patrick. And you think about our human capital. And I've talked about that movie, Idiocracy, but I've gone out and literally talked to our young people. Mm-hmm. And they goof on them at the protest. What are you protesting? I don't know. Seemed like a great thing to do today, right?
Nothing to do today.
And my guy told me to come on out and protest. He'd give me $200. Well, that doesn't really help us. It gives us no benefit. We need a generation of smart people, mm-hmm. of capable people. And bringing them out of school with the education that they have today, they're not prepared to meet the challenges of the workplace. That's it. Are you in some sort of job training? Okay, we'll give you an extra $50 a month. These milestones, I wouldn't be the one to formulate the list, but you could make a series of milestones that would give us better human capital, especially now as we enter the phase. I don't know if I told you a few weeks ago, I met this homeless guy panhandling, and I had a conversation with him.
Yeah, you did.
That was what was lacking, his ability to go and interview for a job. His ability to express himself and to present himself as a viable product, that is our capital, isn't it? I mean, aren't our youth and our population, that's our resource. And anything we can do to improve that resource will help us all on a national level. So I'm opposed to just handing them a check for nothing. But to hand them a check is, you know, because I got to think about what Zuckerberg said, that if I didn't have to worry about how I was going to pay the rent, then I could apply myself to this great thought of, you know, how to make a social media network, right? So individuals, especially our younger individuals who are immediately forced to come out of school and get a menial job just to pay their expenses, can never excel unless they really apply themselves.
Well, I was thinking about borrowing $50,000 for a student loan and getting an art history thing and then going to work for Starbucks. I thought that'd be a good plan.
Great example. Great example, Ben.
Here's an email from Deborah. I just discovered your website by listening to Ken Rolla, who's on once a month, and listened to a couple of the Real World of Money shows, and I really enjoy it. I don't understand most of it, but I'd be very interested in Andrew Goss's thoughts about blockchain and cryptocurrencies.
So okay.
Here's a new listener.
Yeah. All right. So first of all, I'll say this. I have a book entitled The Secret World of Money. I wrote it in 1996 as a primer on money and finance. Number one bestseller on Amazon.com in 97. You know, it's in its, I think I've reprinted it three times since then. But I just ordered another 5,000 of them. So I have cases
great.
Of these books.
Great, good job. Like,
and what I'll do, if you're a One Radio listener, and you call our 800 number and express an interest in furthering your education on the subject, I will send you absolutely free a copy of The Secret World of Money.
Wow, good for you.
So as right after I just said I'm not going to spend any more money
there you go.
On people's financial education, I'll retract that statement immediately. I've already paid for these books. Lord knows they don't owe me a thing. As many as I've sold over the years, I guess I can devote a little of that money to giving away The Secret World of Money. I'll pay for postage. I'll even stuff the envelope with as much extra sample newsletters, CDs, everything I can get in there.
What
I know
a guy.
My staff is going to freak when I
there
leave
the
studio.
There you go. You're just doing what you said you weren't going to do.
Yeah, they're going to absolutely freak. But if you're a Secret World of Money listener and you have to either mention Patrick Timpone or The World of Money, call 800-468-2646. You can also mention One Radio Network, whose motto is Know the Source.
Know the Source.
Gosh.
It's our trademark.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Know the source.
800-468-2646. Mention that you heard it on Timpone's show, and I'll send you The Secret World of Money absolutely free, along with a whole host of an accompanying literature. You don't have to buy anything. You don't need a credit card to get it. Just give us a call. Give me a shipping address. We'll pay the postage, and out they'll go. Read it, and that'll kind of get you up to speed. It's a primer. It's not a question and answer, too. Yeah, it's
real
a Q&A
fun.
Book.
Yeah,
yeah.
Real fun. Yeah.
And so you'll know the difference between a bond, a bill, and a note. You'll know what money is and what it isn't. And these sorts of things that will at least get you a head start into the world of financial education.
Okay, so tell this new listener about your just short version, because we're running really long here, a short version of your feelings about blockchain and cryptocurrency.
Fiat currency that has no substance, where your money is enslaved. And in this case, it's enslaved to blockchain currency, Bitcoin, crypto of every sort, which is only a series of numbers. So you have a unique series of numbers, hexadecimal, numbers and letters. There are only so many combinations, 21 million, unless you add new special characters. But that's a point of another day. This is a total no-substance money. Absolutely no substance, no central bank. And the issuing authority is not in an individual or a company. It is in the fact that you perform a service. This is called Bitcoin mining or coin mining. It's an advancement of our current monetary system. It has refined it to where you were putting some sort of an artificial limitation on the amount of money that can be created. The limitation is artificial because when the Federal Reserve was enacted, we were told there would only be $20 printed for every 1 ounce gold coin in circulation. So it's a monetary substitute. I love blockchain technology because the idea of identifying every record with a unique series of numbers and digits, that's fine. But using it to store your wealth, I'm not at all happy. I don't like cryptocurrencies. I don't think I ever will. In fact, it turns money into a slave. And if your money is a slave, you're a slave.
So the blockchain technology, you think it's pretty solid. And you're
no doubt.
You're long that.
No doubt.
Yeah.
And but to apply that to money, I think is a huge mistake.
Yeah. Fidelity, did you see this? After 18 months, after Fidelity Investments started allowing customers to interface their Coinbase accounts with Fidelity's platform, they're now starting to mining Bitcoins in a small profit, and they're opening up their whole thing to Bitcoin and blockchain and the whole thing. Our goal is to make digital native assets such as Bitcoin more accessible to our investors. So Fidelity's on board of this thing. Yeah? Are they a pretty big organization?
Well, Fidelity? Yeah. The Bitcoin and Ethereum both. They have an institutional platform. But now Man, you're just opening the doors.
Yeah, I think, isn't Putin really into the Ethereum thing? I think he's going to be doing that with his ruble.
Yeah.
Venezuela's officially launched their first state-backed oil-based cryptocurrency called the El Petro. Analysts and experts see it as nothing but a scam. Of course, that could be fake news too, because they don't like Maduro, right?
Yeah,
the people that write these things, you know. But actually, I think, isn't it illegal for Americans to do this, El Petro? Didn't somebody sign something up there in Washington? Yeah, so.
Well,
it's a tough game, you know.
This is the fiat game, yeah, where governments decide what is money and what isn't money. Mm-hmm. It's in the marketplace. That's where the real description is. And gold and silver coin have been money for 5,000 years. And along comes a group of scientists that say, oh, we have a better way to do it. And it's a cryptocurrency. It's denominating, yes, that's it, your wealth, mm-hmm, in a series of digits and numbers. That's it. That's all it is. I do not have any faith in it. You know, 5,000 years from now, maybe we'll have electronic money and be able to count on it. But this is the whole idea with putting your life savings into something like this, is that if it hasn't been engineered right, which I don't think it has, it's definitely going to gamble problem.
And I think there is a lot to the idea that we don't know who's in to Bitcoin big.
The overhang.
And that these people can be controlling it. And I would theorize that, what did it get to? Did it get to 10,000 or
20,000?
It got to 20,000. Yeah. People were booing it. When was this?
Knocking each other over,
to buy it. And then the boys came in and sold it, man. And boom, it went
They
down.
Didn't really sell it all either.
No, of course not. They just made their profits and left.
Made some profits and left.
Yeah.
In reality, the overhang of the market is still enormous.
What's overhang mean?
Overhang means a large pile of cryptocurrency sitting in private hands, one or two private
hands.
Like
the Gates and the Soros of the world. Who knows? Correct. And it could be even Goldman Sachs. You don't know who owns these things.
So that if they dumped that overhang in any market, whether it's stocks or bonds or coins, if they dump it, the value disintegrates. It just dries up and it's gone.
Yeah.
And I do not like any investment where there's a large overhang. That's why I've avoided certain coins. I look strictly at the mintage of how many were made according to the Treasury reports, and then I look at the grading services to see how many have been graded. Then I look at the auction records to see how many have been sold in the last 80 or 100 years.
It's a bit different than Bitcoin.
Yeah, just a little. There's a track record to go on. That I can put my faith in.
Yeah, I understand.
The physical limitations of a minted coin. Hmm. With a cryptocurrency or with a fiat currency, the supplies are limitless. In fact, they are infinite. So the idea that they are finite, that the amount of them, so we have 26 letters and 10 numbers, and now we're going to create 21 million units, but then we're going to create Bitcoin Lite, and there's 21 million of those. And then we're going to create Ethereum, and there's 21 million of those. They're all the same. They each, I think, like 80, 90% of cryptocurrencies all follow the same model. There's nothing different about them except their name.
How do you think it would change the dollar thing if, instead of all these digits, and you've told us that out of the about, we think about $35 trillion of dollars are out there, if they would go, rather than just digital, just do it onto a blockchain thing, would that be better for us dollar users?
Absolutely. Yep. Absolutely.
Just because faster, more of transparency, more security, everything.
Yes. Mm-hmm. No, the blockchain technology is sound.
It's here to stay, right?
The open ledger and the, that's all good.
Well, if there's an open ledger, why can't people see, you know, if George Soros has $1 billion of bitcoins, or Bill Gates, or Zuckerberg, or whoever, Bezos.
You can see it move.
But you don't know who it is.
You don't know who it is.
But I thought there was transparency with blockchain.
Well, there's sort of.
It's kind of sort of.
Yeah. And the thing that bothers me the most about the cryptocurrencies is the thing that the libertarians brag about the most, which is there's no central bank.
No.
There's no one in the middle. So this is not a good thing.
Remember the lady, the Goldman whistleblower 5 years ago, Carmen Segarra? Remember her?
Yeah.
Now she's out with a book about the whole thing. Man, I want to get her on the show. It'd be fun to see what...
Yeah.
She's probably got some dirty laundry there in Golden Mice Slacks. And
you
it would just
know
be
she
fun.
Does. Yeah, boy. Yeah.
Poor Golden Mice Slacks, man. You know, you keep mentioning Italy and... these
for a reason.
There's something going on here.
It's
because
big
now the EU this morning says...
Did they reject the budget?
They rejected the
budget.
Oh, it's
over now. Now, now we got
why is
real.
It such a big deal? Is there so much money in these Italian banks that they're intertwined with the rest of the world?
They owe so much
money.
They owe
money. So
it's
much.
The counterparty
oh, those Italians,
risk.
Those guys.
Oh, man.
So they got into a
they
jam.
They rejected the budget
they
while
rejected
we were
the
talking.
Budget while we were talking this morning.
Oh.
So
uh-oh.
Who knows, right?
You know, the best thing they could have done would have been accept the budget and let them go and continue along their game. But rejecting it now means that the European government as a whole is going to put pressure on Italy to enact more austere measures.
And they don't want to do it.
They won't do that. And that's going to cause, it's just trouble for the European Union.
Mm-hmm.
Which temporarily might be good for the dollar. That probably explains.
Well, you mean if the euro kind of gets knocked down?
Yeah. The half point mm-hmm. jump there in dollar index. So we need it, but it's not going to do Italy any good, and it's not the rest of Europe either.
Well, from the motion picture, if you want to get into a fight, have a bully around, President Trump added it again this morning, just out during the show. He plans to withdraw from a 144-year-old postal treaty that has allowed Chinese companies to ship small packages to the United States at a steeply discounted rate, undercutting American competitors and flooding the market with cheap consumer goods. Man, he's all in.
Absolutely.
He
and
is
he should
all
be.
In with
if
these dudes.
If the Postal Union is allowing them to subvert his...
There's 104... I didn't know that. Did
oh,
you
yeah.
know that? 144
yeah, the
Postal
Union.
Treaty.
Yep.
So they could ship stuff here through the Postal Unit very inexpensively.
Well, yeah, effectively, you buy your postage in the United States, put a stamp on it, and it makes it to China, and mm-hmm. vice versa.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to call the Chinese post office and say, okay, well, now that we've gotten the package to you, would you deliver it to your client in Beijing? Same thing. Well, you ship something from Beijing, and it hits the U.S. Postal Service. It's already been stamped and paid for in China.
Hmm.
And then we deliver it along our postal route through a treaty that we have. And
he's just kiboshed that one.
Yeah, baby. Okay.
I'll tell you what.
Well, I sound more like an isolationist every day. But if we don't start worrying about our domestic marketplace and the drains upon it, we're in trouble, folks. As a nation, we're so deeply in debt that if we don't fix every hole that's dripping money, we're not going to have enough. We'll reach that tipping point where everything we collect in income tax is just servicing the debt, and we might as well just call bankruptcy because we're done.
And isn't it fascinating, too, how much press is being out with the IMF, the BIS, and the World Bank? And you talk about pitching their globalist agenda.
Ooh,
they're out there saying that this whole nationalist thing and
terrible
intent, who they're talking about,
wonder who.
terrible thing.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to crash the whole system. Christine Lagarde's out there. I mean, does he even talk to Donald Trump? Or?
No.
Ooh.
And not unless he shows up at her house, because...
Man.
No, this is... this is, and it's to, it's not just... It's not just the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
This idea of nationalism is spreading all over the world.
All over the world, yeah.
And I'm okay with it. You know, take care of your country. Take care of your country's people. I won't worry about what you're doing. You don't worry about what I'm doing. Then we can have free trade. We can have, cross-border transactions. But to suggest that we're all just one big homogenous world, we should have a central world government, and that, you know, everything should be run from one place... No.
You know, the cherry on the top of this one that we'll end with, you know that there's a movie out called The First Man, and it's Ryan Gosling, and it's a great director. He did I think he did La La Land, which was a great movie.
Yeah.
And the whole idea is Armstrong going to the moon.
Right.
And he planted the flag. And, of course, they left off the part because the director and even Gosling is saying, well, this was an international achievement. This wasn't an American achievement, right? And, you know, it thing is bombing at the box office.
And it should.
No, not bombing, but very, very under their projections, you know.
Correct.
Yeah, you know, so they're not having a good time. So there must be people that are really, wow, must be into this idea of nationalism much more than what we think.
Yes. Huh? People are proud of their country.
I don't want to read too much into it, but no, why well, would this whatever. Movie?
And of course, the European community is discovering this. As they've been forced together as a European Union, and the people that are from Italy believe Italy's the best, and they want to do everything Italy, and the French people want to do everything France, and the Germans want to do everything German. The idea that we're going to accept this world citizen title, and we're going to trade in our constitution for some international Bill of Rights, understand, folks, that that's going to weaken our protection and perhaps enhance the other guy's protection, and we're not necessarily interested in that.
And it's a good testament to the idea that people argue that the Hollywood crowd are globalists, right?
Well, they are.
They are. And this movie cost them $60 million to make, and it's been out a week, and I don't want to wish any bad luck here.
I do.
Okay, well, they've only done $17 million, and you do most of it the first 2 weeks.
So that's right.
It's not a pretty picture, and they claim, you know, they, whoever they are, that one of the main reasons is because they left out the whole American flag thing with Neil Armstrong.
Of course.
And Neil Armstrong is on record saying, you know, I think it's
you don't
dumb.
Want to take away from us.
I don't
no.
think it's dumb.
We did it. Yeah. We did this. Yeah. Yeah. We,
well,
the
Kennedy,
U.S.
Kennedy, the whole thing with going to the moon, if they ever went there, was all about the Americans and showing the Russians, you know, so there.
We can do anything we put our mind
that's
to.
That's what JFK was about. You know?
Yes. Put a man on the moon, bring him back by the end of the decade.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, while his brother was, washing his car in Chappaquiddick Sound, which is another great movie.
Did you see
Chappaquiddick?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, man.
Good one.
And to believe that Edward Kennedy, stayed as a senator and was, in fact, adored by the lefties. They called him the great lion of the Senate.
Yeah.
When he literally left a passenger in a submerged automobile.
It's a true story.
And walked home. Yeah. Rather than try to rescue her and get her out of the car. And even the chief said, man, if I would have just, somebody could have called me, I would have had her out in 25 minutes. Instead, she sat there in that car for hours before she died.
And yeah, they proved that because of her lungs.
So suffocation, not drowning.
Wow.
She had used up all the air in the air pockets. I mean, the wheels of the car were actually sticking out of the water. So she could have been saved, but I guess there was a lot more to that story than meets the eye. And his weak explanation that he was in shock. He was surely in shock enough to think about the impact on his future.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst thing that he feared. Well, did you report the crime? Well, yeah, I called Dad.
We'll stay with the moon for a second before we go. Now you can visit the landing place, writes an emailer of the Apollo moon mission at Cinder Lake Landfill in Arizona.
Right.
It's no secret that the astronauts trained there, but in 2015, when NASA released the rest of the photos, what we now see is junk cars and alternators sticking through the ground. It's a pick-apart on the moon. Yeah, people still argue to this day that... what's his face? 2001, what was his name?
Stanley Kubrick.
Stanley Kubrick produced the whole moon thing. Wouldn't that be something if that was the truth and they really didn't?
Well, here's the number
Wouldn't
one.
That be something?
The number one question that I've been asking, only because of my brief connection, is if you really went to the moon, why'd you fake the photos?
Well, I know there's a lot of
fake photos. If you went to Paris on your summer vacation, why'd you fake the photos? Why didn't you just take pictures in Paris? And, okay, so you can give me the national security excuse, which is what many have done. Well, we really didn't want to reveal what we did, so we made these fake pictures. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you make a fake fisheye lens to give a curvature to the Earth because you're not high enough up to make it what it really looks like.
Well,
that's what gives you all that flat... The flat Earth stuff is just freaking me out.
Wouldn't they get that beautiful picture, though, of the Earth rising, which is classic? Is that just a Photoshop thing, you think?
They definitely sent unmanned stuff up there.
Oh, you could just take pictures, I guess.
No question about that.
But see, just for me, with knowing nothing about science or space, to me, if you look at these guys walking around in these flimsy little spacesuits...
And then if you just...
With nothing coming out, there's no oxygen.
Where's the blowhole?
I mean, it's just like... This is, It never yeah, no, did we look could, real to me.
We could spend another 3 hours on it.
It never looked real to me.
Yeah, it's because it's not.
You don't think they went either, huh?
Well, they may have gone, but they sure didn't show us live photos and actual photos. So I'll believe anything. It's about the proof. I'm not suggesting they didn't go, but if they went, why did they fake the photos? That's the bottom line.
Yeah. Well, we've done some shows on over the years, and boy, if you talk to these people who really believe what you've just said, they'll tell you stuff that'll just like, what?
Yeah, but then if you talk to Neil deGrasse Tyson, who's well known in astronomy, or even amateur astronomers, you can't fake a moon rock. You can't, there's no question a radiation signature on a moon rock. No question.
So
it came
they
from
really have moon rocks?
Yeah.
Well, so you're just saying a robot could have dug them up.
Maybe.
Yeah, who knows?
But there's the moon rocks are real.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Well, I bought one at Walmart the other day. That's not real. Come on. Did I buy a fake moon rock?
No, there's a digital signature to those. Question, science will prove to you that a moon rock is real, came from the moon,
mm-hmm.
no doubt.
Well, if you could tax more people up there, I'm sure they would figure out a way to get back up. But.
Well, if we went to the moon, why aren't we strip mining it now? That's a great question, Kenny. I wish I could give you the answer.
Well, we had a great show this morning. I had a good time.
Thank you.
Thanks, really fun.
Sorry for running over.
Well, we're only 45 minutes over.
Still.
What are you doing? Andrew, if folks would like to talk to you there in Hawthorne, New Jersey, and then once you go to south, they can talk to you as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Same
number,
right?
We're unified. Everything stays the same. Doesn't matter where I am. I'm mm-hmm. always moving anyway. So. Mm-hmm. And if you want to take advantage of the offer, free
the book.
And now I'll make it clear that this is an offer restricted to 2018. So knowing that this is a podcast,
right?
People might play it 5 years from now. Yeah. But if you do this year, you've got until the end of the year to take advantage of a free copy of my first book, The Secret World of Money.
Mm-hmm.
It'll give you a primer education on money and finance. Just call us at 800-468-2646.
I remember the first one I got from you years ago, you included a U.S. note in the book. Remember
which
that?
Has now paid for the book.
Which is, remember that?
Yeah. I put a $2 U.S. note as a bookmark in the first edition. And if you took the bookmark in the plastic and just set it aside in your desk drawer, you can now take out that U.S. note and we'll pay for the book and make you a $5 profit on your purchase.
I'm not selling mine.
Good for you.
I'm going to keep it. All right, kiddo. Patrick Timpone with Andrew Guss. Thanks a lot for being here. We appreciate it.
Thank you for
having
me.
See you next week. Okay. Yep. We will see you tomorrow. We're going to talk about the brain, and it's not the source of consciousness. And I think we may do some more red pill stuff tomorrow because I'm really having fun with that. We think we have some of the best information ever here. With helping you to understand how the mind, body, soul thing works, which is all about the red pill and taking the red pill and learning about physical reality. We think our information and my experiences out of my body and stuff is good stuff. I think it's top of the line. And part of my job this lifetime is to share that with you for those who are willing to listen. And even if it's four people, I don't care. But it's more than that. Anyway, I think we may do that again tomorrow. We'll see. I have a lot of invitations out. If somebody else pops up, we can always do it next week. I love you all very much. Thanks for your ongoing support. We appreciate your donations and supporting the people that we love because we do know the source and the folks that make these products that we promote. They're the real deal. We know them all. We've used them, and we use them today, and we'll use them tomorrow, probably, from sulfur to saunas. And it's on oneradionetwork.com. So I'll see you tomorrow at 9 o'clock. May the blessings be.
Broadcasting from the beautiful Hill Country in Texas, this is oneradionetwork.com.